Jason Mullins is the Tiger basketball beat writer for The Commercial Appeal. He's also the co-host with Jonah Dillon of the Commercial Appeal's Tiger podcast. Episodes available wherever you find your podcast. He's on the Everything app at Munsley. Munz, were you just in a CM Punk kind of mood today?
Well, Jeffrey, I'm glad you asked, and I'm glad you mentioned Jonah Dillon, because was chatting with Jonah a little bit ago, and I happened to ask him, what song should I go with for today's hit? And this was it. This was his suggestion, and it wouldn't have been my choice. I was actually going to go with "Long Live the Strange" by Gaz Coombs.
Of course, who could forget?
But I opened the door for Jonah, and he walked right through it. So I had to honor his wish here.
You don't strike me as a punk guy. I'm not saying you're anti-punk, but he doesn't strike me as like one of your guys.
I'm really like, it's interesting that you picked up on that. I'm not necessarily anti CM Punk,
correct?
But I am not, and this was part of, I think, the reasoning behind Jonah's call. I think that might have been the reason why he chose this when I left him the floor. But I prefer, it just doesn't interest me necessarily. It just doesn't move me. So I haven't been watching a ton. I've been tuning in a ton lately, but
you're not missing much.
I did see, stop me if you and I talked about this, but did SummerSlam not feel like it was like 2017 again or something with Baron Corbin winning a belt?
I did not even, so when Corbin had his surprise return,
yeah,
I didn't even know that he was back in the company.
Yeah. Yeah. And much less getting a belt at a premier PLE in 2026. That threw me for a loop. And then you had,
I did think it was smart for him to just finally, like, if he was like, he was just holding on with the hair, like he should have shaved his head like decades ago.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And I like Kevin Owens. I actually think Kevin Owens is probably, he's one of my three or four favorites currently, but like, you know, he makes his return, and then there was a six woman tag match where the Bella Twins and Paige didn't even win, but they became the story, like where the Bellas turned on Paige, and then you had Lesnar in the main event on night one, and I could go on where it just felt like, this feels like we're back in 2017.
Well, and it's incredibly frustrating because a lot of the young talent is really exciting.
I know.
And it just feels like in the end, everything is just, you know, when you've got the corporate overlords, it's like, we just got to have the biggest names. And it's like, guys, I don't really need to see Brock wrestle anymore. I'm good.
Well, and I'll even,
and Brock, and Brock is like one of the greatest of all. Like, I'm not even in the Brock hating camp. Like, when Brock is motivated, he is an incredible wrestler. Like, yeah, it's insane.
And I'll grant you, he didn't win.
Like, yeah.
They gave Obafemi the win on that one. And that's all well and good. But, like, what is Baron Corbin doing winning a belt
over Trick
in 2026? Over young, budding talent. It was weird to me. But all that to say that I did really enjoy Chelsea getting the belt in that ladder match. I thought that was good, and then I did happen to see.
But it's like, even that felt random.
Sure,
I'm with you. I like Chelsea, but it's like, it's just like, okay, like,
I know.
There's just I know being a wrestling fan is just hating wrestling, but it's like,
exactly.
Can we at least have a story?
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like the last time they did that was with the Bloodline.
Back to your KO point, the Festival of Friendship.
Yeah, that one too.
I mean, Jericho KO is one of like my favorite angles of my life. I'm not kidding. The Festival of Friendship is something that will stick with me for the till the day I die.
Yeah, but we digress.
It's a new list.
It was CM Punk's day on the show today.
It is indeed. Thanks be to Jonah Dillon. All right, before we get into a couple of things that you've written about, we were talking last week about the golf tournament.
Yeah.
So I went out Sunday and experienced for myself. And I think the thing that was striking to me is, A, the event does not get its due for being one of the best things we do. The tournament is always incredibly well run, and there's always a point of pride from everyone that works there, and it always stands out, and I leave thinking the same thing every time. The one thing that I was really struggling with was what is best for Memphis is not necessarily what's best for the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm.
But I also was left going, I don't even know if the PGA Tour knows what's best for themselves right now.
Yeah. First of all, to your point, yes. I've been covering the tournament since 2019, and it's been first class all the way through and through every year. You never go out there and look around and nobody's ever like, man, this is a debacle. I mean, outside of the weather, which they can't control, obviously.
Right.
Sometimes it rains stupid hard, and sometimes
it's an outdoor sport played in the South.
Yeah.
In the summer.
Most oftentimes it's a million degrees and everything, but like they make it work and they do it. They put on a good show and it's always very well done. So, yes, to your point on that, but, I think the PGA has decided that like nobody could go out there or watch it on TV or whatever, which by the way, should have a story coming out pretty soon about the viewership.
Scotty is one of the, basically there are three people in golf that move the needle that are currently active. It's Rory, Scotty, and Bryson.
Yeah.
And Scotty had to do it by just being dominant. Like, you know what I mean? It's not like Scotty has become more interesting as he continues to win.
Yeah, like he's been in the hunt here before.
Last year, remember? I kind of was surprised he didn't actually close the deal.
I think a lot of us were, yeah. Two years ago, was it the year that Fleetwood was still looking for his first win and he had
That was last year, and then Rosie and Spawn like caught him.
That's right. Yeah, he fell apart late and they caught him and they went on to Justin went on to win it. Even the PGA, like not even Brian Rolapp, who was here, who did come to Memphis last week. Now, I don't think he was here on actual any tournament days, but he was here early part of last week. I don't think anybody could be here or watch it or get reports of how it was done and how it played out and go and think anything other than, man, like this is just good. There's nothing wrong with this. It's just that it doesn't make enough money for the PGA. Or probably more accurately, it doesn't make as much money as they think it could make moving it somewhere else. Now,
and that's an unknowable question until they try it.
Yeah, exactly. Now there is no debate whatsoever that this tournament does not need to be played in August in this city, no matter what it is, whether it's a playoff event, whether it's a World Golf Championship, whether it's a championship series, whether it's Challenger Series, like you don't need to be playing professional golf in Memphis in August. That is unequivocally, that's inarguable. But like, again, like you don't walk away from that experience and think to yourself that, yeah, we shouldn't be doing this. Like it's good for everybody involved. But the PGA has, again, it seems the PGA has decided that the only thing that matters is the to their belief that there is money left on the table by, you know, putting a tournament here, you know, one of these higher profile tournaments here. And that's why they've decided to, you know, that's why they did put the statement out that they put out. But you know what? As we got toward the end of the weekend last week, I'm just saying that I heard from no fewer than five people who told me that it may not be a done thing. It may not be a foregone conclusion. Like, there may be room to walk it back. Not saying that it's going to happen, not saying that it's even, but like,
well, I mean, I do think this is true. I agree with your point that the tour believes that they're leaving money on the table, and the tour looks at it like they have major markets that they don't have events in. Why don't we have events in them?
Correct.
But no one's said, well, that right there, you realize we had events there, right?
Right.
And it didn't work. And there's a reason why we're in some of these other markets. I took note of the fact that Greensboro, now Raymond James did pony up, is going to pay for it, but Greensboro is keeping or is going to get a signature series event. They will also have an event in Charlotte. So that's basically two events 90 miles from each other. What that also told me, though, is I don't know if the tour's got the demand for all the events that they believe that they would have.
Yeah, and that is sort of, you know, those are some of the whispers that I've been hearing over the last couple of weeks, is that, like, the PGA might have...
They also own the course.
Yeah, oh yeah, and they know it. Like, that was part of...
Meaning you don't have to... for everyone that's asking why that matters, they don't have to split revenue.
Yeah. That is one of the things that they told me in my discussions with them leading up to the announcement, leading up to the news, that, you know, is very much like they know it. Like, they it's not lost on them. Like, obviously that's something that they had to weigh in putting that statement out. But again, to your point, what you were saying a second ago, I heard whispers over the course of the last week to the PGA thought that they would be able to do better, that there would be a demand, that it would be, you know, better, more, you know, it would be advantageous to them to relocate some of these tournaments, but that maybe as they've gotten deeper into this, that it may not be exactly what they thought, that there may not be the appetite in some of these bigger markets for these types of events that they initially thought. And so maybe that's part of the reason why this isn't a done deal, or it might not be a done deal. I just heard from a number of people independent of one another over the course of the weekend that there might still be a shred of hope for Memphis to still get a spot on the championship series circuit.
I'll tell you, I know you were covering it. So did you happen to catch Jim Nance's open on Saturday?
No, but I didn't hear like word for word what he said, but I did catch his interview with Raj Subramaniam on Sunday. And, you know, I have a feeling, I assume it was similar to what he said on Saturday.
It was, if you were behind the scenes, it was almost as if it was a direct response to a lot of the criticisms.
Uh-huh.
It was over the top. Now, it's also important to note, produces the golf for CBS, the PGA Tour for CBS, is Seller Shy.
Yeah.
He is born and raised and still lives in Memphis.
Yeah, so Memphian, yes.
I'm not saying that it's completely unrelated, but it was – I took note as I was watching the broadcast. I was like, oh, that didn't feel like it was out of nowhere.
Yeah.
To which I also was wondering, I wonder if the tour knows, like, there's some damage control with FedEx.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, the longer this plays out, the more I am starting to think that what the PGA did by with the timing and everything and how they chose to kind of, you know, to how they went about confirming this. I just have to think or have to wonder whether it was like a temperature check. Whether, you know, like,
well, that's the other thing. So for those that don't know, Brian Rolapp came from the NFL. And I think one of the lessons that he is learning is that the NFL, more times than not, gets to operate like the mob, where they decide to do something and they just do it.
Yeah.
I think he is learning the hard way in golf that it's not just as simple as announcing, here's a plan, here's what we're going to do.
Yeah, you can't treat, they're not the same. And
correct.
I had conversations with people who said the exact same thing last week at the tournament. That you know, perhaps he is realizing that in real time, that you can't treat things the same. It just doesn't work like that. I'm not discounting the possibility that the PGA either A, did this to like
the old tribal, you
know,
then
to gauge and you know, well, okay, it didn't go over well, so maybe we'll rethink this, or to your point, like they thought that it would be just fine to do it this way, the way, you know, Brian Rolapp's done things in the past and everything, and they realized it wasn't, it doesn't work like that, and now they're potentially willing to rethink things because of that. But I'm not saying, again, like I still think the likelihood is that Memphis is going to be a challenger series.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's important to point out is that after next year, you know, obviously we still have one more tournament to go before whatever happens is going to happen. But whatever happens is only they've already said that it's for 3 years. Like whatever decision is made, these are only 3-year decisions. So even if Memphis does wind up a Challenger Series event in 2028, it's going to be up for, you know, either it's, you know, like perhaps it could change in 2031 is what I'm trying to say, or 2032. So I thought that was interesting too.
No, I mean, I think the other problem that the tour is also having to deal with is, you know, when the tour split with LIV, the entire business and the economy got inflated because there was a mad rush to keep talent. Mm-hmm. And I think now you're starting to see, I mean, LIV's basically going to fold or exist in some form that is drastically diminished. And a lot of these companies are kind of sitting there going like, what are we paying $30 million for?
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know what I mean? Like, and we haven't even gotten to the fact that, like, 2031, that's when their TV contract's up.
Right.
And they're not going to be first in line.
Right. But, yeah, it was, even if there wasn't the same gusto that you normally feel when you're out there, I still think it was, you know, like it was well attended and it was highly viewed. It was the most, for the opening event of the FedEx Cup playoffs, it was the most viewed final round since 2013. And it was the most viewed third round of the opening event of the playoffs since 2007. And the first two rounds carried on the ESPN family of networks were more viewed than the weekend that Brooks Koepka returned earlier this year. Forget what the event was, but more people watched this, the first two rounds of this, than they did the first two rounds of Brooks Koepka's return from Liv.
I think that was San Diego.
Yeah, like I said, I forget which one it is.
I think it was Farmers.
I think, no, you're right. That is it.
I'm pretty sure it was former.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, again, like there's an appetite for golf in Memphis, and we'll just have to wait and see if it's going to be, if it's going to be, you know, Scotty, Rory and company, playing in it in 2 years, or if it's going to be, you know, Jackson, Koivun or whoever else, you know, the Jackson Koivuns of the world.
Or the Brant Snedekers, the guys. I think that's also good. Yeah. It's going to be a lot of names you might recognize that are trying to. Hell, Jordan Spieth might be at that point. That might be where he's playing.
Entirely possible.
All right. Before we get to Tiger basketball, I wanted to discuss one of the other stories you've written about. So, quite the headline with Rhodes professor charged with fraud by horse racing group faces lifetime ban.
Yeah.
So, I wanted to discuss with you, I'm under the impression Marshall Graham is the economics professor at Rhodes who owns horses. I'm under the impression that I'm rooting for Marshall.
He's also Phil Graham's son, former United States Senator from Texas.
I'm under the impression that so many of these horse racing organizations are operating so shady. If you want to look into like these conglomerates that are manipulating markets and screwing all everyone, I'm inclined to take his side. But what are the facts of the case that, as you understand it?
So basically, the way the horse racing integrity,
which by the way, wildly ironic.
Yeah, I know.
But horse racing integrity and safety authority.
Yeah, and it's very new. It's not been around all that long. I think 2020 or something like that. But yeah, they, according to them, found that Marshall Graham, the Rhodes College professor that your good friend and mine, Mark Giannotto, wrote about in 2019, about this very thing, being a horse owner and sports bettor and all these sorts of things, data analyst, economics professor, like he was, you know, big into the sports betting, into the horse racing betting side of things. But this authority, this group, found and alleges and has charged Marshall with accessing information that he was not supposed to be able to access. The person in charge of the investigation came out yesterday or 2 days ago and basically called it what it is. Like she said, it's tantamount to insider trading, that he had information that he should not have had, and he bet on the horses that he had information on and profited from it, profited from those bets. And that's really what it boils down to. And Marshall says he posted a really long, statement on,
X, the everything app.
Yeah. On Twitter or whatever. And basically said, there was a couple of things, you know, one or two things that I may have done that I probably shouldn't have, or that I would do differently if I could go back, but I'm going to fight this. He said, ultimately, we could not reach an agreement on several issues, including my ability to speak publicly and tell my side of the story. I intend to vigorously defend myself in the HISA proceedings. He said he didn't do this, he didn't do that, he didn't do this. He said, if I did do anything where poor judgment was part of the equation, it was in not bringing the vulnerability of the HISA's
attention like sooner,
to their attention sooner. He's taking some heat for it. It's a pretty fantastical, sensational headline.
And yet Bob Baffert still in the sport. All right. Let's get into some Tiger basketball. So while you were also covering the golf tournament, some names from the portal that have been part of the lawsuits have been at least connected to Memphis. Is there anything legitimate to that, or is that just the classic, this would make some sense, let's throw the name out there?
So two things. No, there is nothing legitimate to those connections, to the reports, air quotes reports. There is nothing legitimate to those. And B, They wouldn't, even if they were, they wouldn't make sense. So first of all, Memphis is full. Memphis has a roster at the, they're at their limit, number one, but that's not even the most like egregious thing. The two names that I've seen that have been attached to the two players that have been like reportedly linked to Memphis or that Memphis is showing interest in these players, they're both guards. And if there's one thing Memphis does not need any more of, it's guards. And so, yeah, like, so, but again, off the rip, I've spoken to multiple people, and Penny has himself has, like, he very unequivocally shot it down. He said last week, actually, yeah, we were following around during the pro-am, and he said, not even close to even exploring this. So, you know, of course you take everything with a, you know, slightly a grain of salt because things change, whatever, whatever. But I've talked to people, since then, from the on the university side who said, there's a good reason he said that. And it's because we have instructed all of our coaches that this is a zero tolerance thing. We are not wading into those waters. We're just not. And that goes for every single sport. So, and that's the other thing is like, you have to remember when it's, you know, silly season, like, you know, and agents are part of the,
you gotta create a market.
Yeah, like exactly. Like just because somebody, you know, some social media account says that, you know, this player is hearing from, you know, X, Y, Z, A, B, C, D, E, F, like that's 99 times out of 100, that's the player or the player's agent thing. And so that does not necessarily mean it is so. But anyway, the point is, no, Memphis is not at all looking at anyone for its roster.
Okay, then in the mailbag, you were asked whether or not, you know, Penny's coaching for his job. And you know, as we've discussed, he did not have his contract extended, and Ed Scott laid out the expectations. I was thinking about it like this. What happens if they're like 19-13?
Yeah.
Like to me, like I almost feel like if you're Ed Scott, you're hoping for a definitive answer one way or the other. What you're obviously hoping for is the Tigers make the tournament, great season, everything back on track. Here's the new contract. Let's think about the future. Like that's obviously the best case.
Yep.
But then, you know, if you can't get that, you almost want a repeat of this season where it's definitive.
Yep.
What happens if you get into that? They're not an at-large team. They don't win the league. It wasn't a disaster, but it's just kind of a meh year.
I mean, I think that depends on if there are good enough reasons for that. This is the way I explained it in the mailbag. If you get to January and four of your five starters are out for the year, well then, and no matter which way it goes, but especially if it goes poorly or if it goes just meh, I don't think that you're going to see, and they miss the NCAA tournament, I don't think that you're going to, like, those are extenuating circumstances. Those are extreme extenuating circumstances that are out of Penny Hardaway's hands. And like, to hold him accountable for that, like, to miss the tournament because four of your five starters were out for the year by, you know, before you even got to conference play, that would be harsh. That would be, like, that would be really tough to be like, all right, well, we gave it a shot, and I know you were missing, you know, I know you were hit, like, historically hard from an injury standpoint, but doesn't matter. You didn't make the tournament, you're out. I could not see that happening. So, yeah, like, I don't think that it is as cut and dry as make the tournament and you're good, miss the tournament and you're fired. But, like, I think there would be some uncomfortable, some really tense, uncomfortable, kind of what you said, like, if you're just average, but, like, you're not terrible, and you don't make the NCAA tournament, I think that's where we're at. I do. I think that's where we are. And that if you don't make the tournament, And you had your full complement of players, or maybe you had one or two injury situations, but by and large, you were healthy, and you still didn't get there.
And an expanded tournament. Now, granted, do I really believe that those expanded spots are for the Memphises of the world? I don't. But at the same time, it is going to be a bigger field.
It is, and so I just think that if everything is all things being equal, and you know you don't get there, but you did pretty well. I don't think that would be enough. I think that would mean a changing of the guard.
Munns, you're great to join us. Appreciate it, buddy.
All right, thanks, Jeffrey.
Jason Munns, Tiger basketball beat writer for the Commercial Appeal. Check out the Tiger podcast from the Commercial Appeal wherever you find your podcast. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get back into the world of college football. Who could crash the CFP party? CBS Sports has written about it. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Over at CBS Sports, Brad Crawford has discussed unranked teams that could fight for a college playoff berth. First team that he lists is Florida. Said, what's to like? John Summerall's blueprint travels. His teams play fast, they hit hard, and they rarely beat themselves. Three traits that can flip close games against a demanding schedule, like the Gators face in the SEC this season. The Gators enter the final days of fall camp without an identifiable starting quarterback, but Summerall is not bothered. Georgia Tech transfer Aaron Fila brings experience in Buster Faulkner's system, and Tramell Jones is a program favorite. Florida retained a core and supplemented it with portal help at several needed spots. The roster is loaded at a couple of positions, particularly wide receiver. Summerall has won immediately at every stop, and Gainesville offers considerably more resources than he had at Troy or Tulane. If the Gators establish an identity early and survive September, they possess the roster, coaching edge, and home field juice to crash the playoff. The worry? Florida plays Georgia and Atlanta, Texas, Ole Miss, Oklahoma, and Missouri away from Gainesville, a brutal slate of games in a hostile environment. I have no idea on Florida. You could talk me in anything from 9-3 to the schedule just gets him and they're fighting to make a bowl. I have no idea.
They even noted that part of their slate is incredibly difficult, and that doesn't even, bring up when, in the next portion of this, when to pay attention. They go on the road early to play Auburn.
Correct.
Which, we're talking about an Auburn team that also a lot of turnover, but they're bringing in a coach that just coached in the same conference. Correct me if I'm wrong. Had a level of success against Summerall.
Yes.
Also bringing in a quarterback who was awesome last year.
On top of that, it will be a...
It's a road game, too.
So it's a road game, and also Auburn's big season opener, they moved to Atlanta. So, yes, they're going to play Southern Miss, but, this will be the first big home game at Auburn. Tough spot. Then you host Ole Miss, but then you got, weird next week at Mizzou.
We keep bringing this up with Missouri. We really don't have a ton of insight on what they are, but with the pieces that they have, Ahmad Hardy is awesome. Do we know when exactly he's going to play? Do we even know if he's practicing right now? We know he's cleared for football activity.
Correct. I do not. I would imagine he's got the old yellow jersey on.
The non-con. I could absolutely see that, but... Do we think that once he is at a point to where he's kind of rolling, which they play, this is for Florida, they play Missouri, what is that, week 5?
Yes, right after the Ole Miss game.
If you were to tell me Ahmad Hardy is chugging along by week 5, I'd believe that. That's a tough guy to stop, and we keep talking about Eli Drinkwitz as a guy that can get a lot out of a quarterback. He certainly got a talented one and brought one of the top receivers along with him.
Yeah. And, you even look at it, they're slight underdog already, early line at Auburn.
Okay.
There'll be a home dog likely to Ole Miss.
Most likely.
Missouri, probably, I would think, slight dog.
We're talking maybe a handful of points, if any. Could even be a flip them.
At Texas, Georgia and Atlanta, Oklahoma at home. Like, I don't know. Like to me, they're just one of those teams that, like, I have no idea. But what's interesting is the next team that's mentioned is Boise.
There's a handful of them in here in this similar vein that I find interesting. But yes, Boise State.
So with Boise, what's to like? Boise State has everything to emerge as the Group of Six best team and make the playoff push. Maddox Mattson returns. Maddox Mattson's return gives the Broncos a proven quarterback. Is he?
Mm.
While Dylan Riley and Sire Gaines provide explosiveness in the backfield. Spencer Danielson has established a connected culture that expects to win, not merely compete for a conference title. Boise State moves into the rebuilt Pac-12, but remains the league's most accomplished program. If the Broncos handle a manageable schedule and avoid upsets that sinks Group of Six contenders, another run towards the college football's biggest stage feels entirely realistic. Another team that is also included is UNLV. I think it is also fair to say, if you're going to include those two teams, a team that plays both of them should also be in the mix.
So it's very funny you bring that up, because I thought the exact same thing as I see both of those teams on this list. For both of those teams, the team that we are referencing, being the University of Memphis, shows up in both of the when to pay attention for both of those teams. It is if they can split between these multiple difficult games, because correct me if I'm wrong, that UNLV team plays Memphis at home in week zero. Is that game against Hawaii on the island?
Give me 2 seconds. I want to say yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, so they are going from a home game and then immediately hitting the road to probably one of the more difficult places to play, not just because, I mean, they do have a great home crowd, don't get me wrong.
Brutal travel.
Brutal travel to get out to Hawaii.
And since Timmy Chang's been there, they've
been really
pretty good at home. I think the other thing that's interesting is, so here's UNLV's non-cons. Memphis?
Yep.
At North Texas. And again, we have no idea what Neil Brown is or isn't, but
if the reporting on the investment that they're giving, that team could still be pretty solid.
It's on the road. They will also play Cal at home.
JKS season?
They have to go to Air Force.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's not an easy place to play.
And everybody's darling right now, Jason Eck in New Mexico, that game's on the road as well.
That's a pretty tough slate for UNLV.
So the reason why I mention this is over at ESPN, Bill Conley has updated SP Plus rankings for the final preseason. So Boise is his top-ranked G6 team at 49th.
Okay.
UNLV is at 55.
Mm-hmm.
Navy is at 64.
Okay.
San Diego State is at 65, and then Memphis at 67. One of these teams has a unique opportunity that the other ones don't. Memphis can play three teams ranked ahead of them.
Well, for now. In the preseason, we'll see. I mean,
correct.
We know it changes.
But my larger point is, if Memphis were to go 3-0 to start the season, Memphis would entirely control their own destiny.
Yes.
And truthfully, when you consider Boise has to play Oregon week one.
Mm-hmm.
UNLV is likely to take another loss.
Yeah.
Whether it be Cal, whether it be New Mexico, whether it be...
Hell, it could be that Hawaii game.
Correct. Memphis might even be afforded a mulligan, because they would have the direct head-to-head. Now, I suppose it's possible to say, well, what if San Diego State goes undefeated? But San Diego State's also going to have at UCLA.
Okay.
They do host JMU.
JMU is not a light task.
But San Diego State also has to go to Boise and to Fresno to close the year.
I find it hard to believe that they go undefeated.
So now, if they go, that would be fascinating. If they went undefeated, that would mean wins at UCLA,
mm-hmm.
a JMU win that is likely to be a quality win, the favorites to win the Sun Belt.
Yeah.
They would have a win at Boise. What would the, that's the thing, it's like, what would the resume look like? Because the one thing they would have that Memphis wouldn't would be a P4 win.
Yep.
But essentially the best wins would be very similar. How would that stack up if Memphis had wins at UNLV and at Boise?
Ooh, would that come down to conference? I recognize conference championships don't necessarily, they don't have the AQ factor anymore.
Correct, but it's definitely going to be a part of the human element.
Exactly.
The reason why I bring all this up is that Stephen Godfrey, on his podcast with Andy Staples and with Ross Dellinger, mentioned one of the teams that he is watching for in the G6 is Memphis. And the reason that he brought it up was in the American, with so many of the brands having first-year head coaches, the league has become much more of a transfer portal utopia, if you will. One person that has proof of concept so far is Charles Huff.
Yes.
I mean, Charles made the mention, he's Lane Kiffin of the G6. If Memphis can prove that in a league that's going to be defined by what do you do in the portal, and they already have a leg up, that's the team that he was watching. I mean, to me,
Where I think this also can get a little interesting.
The problem for Memphis is I do not love the fact that every single tough game is on the road.
Right. And even to that point, now I obviously don't.
I mean, I'm not trying to disrespect Army, but I'm saying like of the actual contenders, UNLV, Boise, Navy.
Right.
The teams that are in SP Plus ranked ahead of you.
They're all road games.
Those are three road games.
There's also
three road games with brutal travel.
Road, definitely. Again, this is not trying to hold the sins of Tiger program prior. That's also assuming that they don't end up losing a game that they should win.
Correct.
And I'm not trying to do that, but if we're looking at this where they win these big games, they win these big games on the road, what happens if they do end up dropping one of these games that they should?
Even the greatest season in Tiger football history included a loss at Temple.
There you go.
Now, it's not the same Temple, and
sure.
Listen, there's a play or two that could have gone the other way, but I would also argue this. The team was also a missed chip shot away from losing to Tulsa.
Right.
So, the point being, those happen.
Absolutely.
Can you avoid it? Now, what does help is if you do have the banner wins, like we kept seeing last year, South Florida was getting the benefit of the doubt.
Because they had the banner wins.
Bingo. And if you can start that season 3-0, I think you're
in not just good shape, you're in great shape for the rest of your season.
And you're going to be in the front of everyone's mind because week 0, you played on Fox, and you will have a noteworthy win against Boise. On the road, nonetheless, on the blue turf. Let's take a break. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, tell your story. We got to go to Nick Kyrgios. Over on X, the Everything app. I wanted you to hear this from me first. I recently failed a drug test in Mallorca after testing positive for cocaine. I made a huge mistake, and I take full responsibility for it. Get to the butt. I'm not going to make excuses, but I do want to give some context about where I've been. The last couple of years of injuries have taken a huge toll on me, both physically and mentally. My body hasn't been able to do what my mind expects it to do. Coming to terms with being near the end of my career has been harder than I ever imagined. Is he really trying to do the, I did cocaine in Mallorca because of my mental health? You were partying in Mallorca, dude.
We're not holding that against you, buddy.
But what is different?
Hmm.
Oh, that's right. He does TV now.
Yep.
Please don't fire me.
What a guy.
I tested positive. Duh. My thanks to Jason Munns and Coach Hurd for joining the program. If you missed anything, you'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.